Yes, how's it going, man? It's been ages.
Yeah, it's been a minute. When was the last time I was on?
I don't know, but last time I saw you was in New York, and it felt like a while ago.
Yeah, I was out there. well, I mean, I wasn't out in New York. So I visited.
Was it 2 years ago?
I think it was 2 years ago, because last Christmas, I normally, for context for listeners, I visit my family in Jersey every Christmas, and I'll try to hit up Plan A folks then. But the thing is, for me, I was out there in Jersey this past Christmas, and I was just like, I don't really want to go to New York. Like, I wanted to see you and Chris,
but it's no desire to come into the city itself.
It's just a lot of work. I saw Adam, and that was good. But even that was like, he lives on the other side of Jersey City from my sister. And that was a lot. So just like, New York was just that much more. And we kind of talked about this last time I was there in person with you, but I feel like the city is just like, I love that city for many years visiting, just about there every year. And something about it is just like, kind of, I don't know. And I don't even know if it's the city or it's just me that's changed, but like, it's lost a lot of its luster. It's just, particularly Manhattan too. I mean, but just like being there, it's like, you know, we walked around for a bit. It's just kind of depressing, you know?
Yeah, I think, I don't know either. I was walking around. I go to work in Manhattan and then I just come back. Mm. I would say it's not necessarily the physical deterioration of the city, because like, Manhattan has always been shitty, like in terms of, you know, trash and noise and whatever.
Yeah,
but there does seem to be I don't know what it is, man, but we've been doing some pods about like 90s era sitcoms and stuff. There's another one that we the follow-up one that we did too about it, and I've been watching a lot of like Manhattan based movies from like the late 70s and 80s and stuff, and you know, I don't know, I think it just has to do with like, Manhattan definitely embodies a certain kind of national spirit in terms of like business and media, and you know, people come here because it's like the arena for making a name for yourself, and you know.
Right.
And I feel like that's sort of faded in a way. And if you take that away, then Manhattan doesn't have the, you know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't have the same draw, you know? And then people are just like, why am I here? It's so expensive. And, you know, I'm just like, it just feels like a rat race. And there's not really like this big competition going on for making, you know, something out of yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and I think just the fact that my sister doesn't live there anymore and her kids aren't there, I don't have that association with it. I've never been much of a striver type, so it's just like the whole idea of like, quote-unquote, making it was never something I think was really in my mind. I think I always appreciated it as a city just because it felt like, and I mean, that's certainly, there's truth to it, that there's a lot going on at all times. It's just, you know, and this is going a little bit farther off of what we were going to talk about today, but like, I was in New Orleans back in October, and I kind of had a similar sensation where like, I love that city and I had a lot of fun there. But like, walking around the French Quarter, I kept thinking to myself, like, it just, you know, I'm on vacation right now. I'm supposed to be like not working, which I was doing and I was enjoying myself. But at the same time, I wasn't really escaping my problems in like the sense that you kind of think of with a vacation. I was still in America, which is in, you know, visible decline at all times. And this was even before like that terrorist attack that happened at the beginning of the year. And I was just walking through it, and it's just like, there's just a lot of like drunk people, it felt a little bit, there was like an element of it that felt a little bit like Manhattan, where it's just like this place that just hasn't really been taken care of. And the things about a society that you kind of associate with a place that's in decline are just kind of openly celebrated. And I know that's not true for all parts of New Orleans, but it's definitely a city that like kind of wears itself on its sleeve for the good and the bad.
New Orleans has always been a shithole, though, right?
Right.
So
right.
I think what's going on is I think it's really I've been thinking a lot about this because New York City doesn't actually look any different than it used to, right? Like nothing's really changed. In many ways, it's gotten better. There has been improvements, and there are, you know, a lot of buildings have been upgraded, a lot of parks have been upgraded. I know people won't believe this, but a lot of the subway system has been cleaned up and looks, you know, physically better than it used to. But I still think that what's going on is mostly subjective. And that,
what do you mean subjective? Like something
has to do with our state of mind.
Okay.
And there is a I would say that my theory on this is that we're starting to not be able to gloss over like some of the shittiness of our surroundings. I think a lot we were like lying to ourselves a lot about the physical environment, like, or we were like ignoring cues that I think were there to suggest that decline and decay was occurring, and we were not advancing, things were not getting better, and there were just like some really depressing aspects of the physical environment, and we lost the ability to overlook a lot of that stuff. I think that's what's going on. And so I don't think we're, and when I say it's subjective, I don't mean like people are just like, I think there's this trope, like this thing going around accusing people of being overly negative and, you know, what I don't think that's true. I think people are actually just becoming more realistic. That's what I think. But
no, I think you're totally right. I mean, yeah, I guess that kind of bleeds into what we wanted to talk about today, where
What do we want to talk about? I know you'd kind of mentioned it, but I'm curious.
Yeah, I guess what I was thinking. So I work in government now. I've had a government job for the past 3 years, state government. And it's the best job I've ever had. I'm like, in general, I would say, like for myself, I'm doing great, like better than I ever have in my life, I would say.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And the thing that's like weird though about saying that, not weird, but like is like a hard thing, is that I feel like a rarity in like just my day-to-day relationships with, it doesn't matter, like friends, family, like internet acquaintances, in general, just seems like I'm doing good, but it feels like kind of gravity is pushing, trying to do its best to like push against that. And
you feel like you're the exception.
Yeah. And I'm not sure. Like, I definitely have days where, because I care about people and I want to see them to do well, that it like takes its toll on me. But because in general, like I'm like, have reached this functional threshold where like I can always return back to center in a way that I feel like nobody else around me does. It's difficult, and it's nice listening to like Plan A and you're talking to T on Champagne Sharks. Listen to you guys talk, because I feel like you are all on a similar page of not necessarily doing like fantastic, like you're not necessarily celebrating what's going on, but I feel like maybe this part of this is like the Trump derangement shit, where it's like people just lose their minds about things that like really just don't matter. Like, I just can't see what the correlation is to like their personal life. But like, just finding people who have like some salience on like what's going on. And because I don't think what is like happening in this country is really that surprising. Like, nothing should be that like hitting you from left field. Like this, a lot of this stuff has been building for years and years and years. And particularly from like, it's sad too, because like I working for a government, I love the job and I feel like what I do has a lot of purpose, and that seems like a rare thing too. But even then, it's like people around me, it seems like also don't have that like direct line of like what they do all day and how that makes them feel. And I guess I just wanted to like get your kind of vibe on it, because I know you've with Shan, like working for, she's at the Fed, right? Federal level.
Yeah, she's at the federal government.
How's that going?
Not good. I mean,
as much as you can share.
Yeah, I mean, she's fine, but like, you know, it's a rough time right now for federal employees because of DOGE and all that stuff. So I am of the belief that that's going to pass, and Elon Musk has already kind of been sort of booted out of DOGE,
right?
And because they've attacked his base and his stock price is getting eroded by these anti-Tesla sort of boycotts around the world. He's got to go manage his fortune now. And I think he was stepping on the toes of other people, namely like Rubio and Besant and others who are like, who is this guy? You know, like,
right.
we're busy with real shit. And he's just sitting around pretending like he's managing my fucking agency. So he's out. And then, like I predicted, I think Besant is going to become the central figure in this administration. And this is his trade war, really. He's the field marshal. Trump is, you know, giving his imprimatur to it, but the specifics of it, I think, are being run by Besant. But in terms of, I mean, that's whatever, that's that. But like, in terms of what I think is going on in terms of like decline and stuff, it's like, look, I mean, I think I've long had frustration with white collar, sort of like elite liberal types, like my own class of people, you know, like highly educated, and highly levered, meaning like they were more than comfortable taking out really large debt to buy really large homes and finance pretty lavish, lifestyles. All, you know, on credit cards. And I think they were comfortable with that because they felt that their position was very secure. So the people that I know were both in a position where they are high earners, right? Making middle six figures, meaning somewhere in that $300,000 to $700,000 range, right?
Right.
Pretty good. But they were leaning on that income as a way to manage the cash flow service of debt, meaning that they were still highly leveraged, and they were living a lifestyle that was more lavish than even their relatively high incomes would be able to afford. And so they were stressed because in a way they were living paycheck to paycheck. You know, I mean, yeah, they were socking away money, and they're mostly like, you know, these people were feeling good because their houses were appreciating. And then by paying off the mortgage, they were accreting equity. And so that is a form of saving, I guess, in a way, to build up equity in your house is a kind of saving. And then they usually maxed out their IRAs or 401ks. And so that felt like savings, especially when it's growing at, you know, 35-40% a year.
Right.
It feels like savings, but relative to the income, like 401k is not that much, right? I think it's like $23,000 or something a year max, you know, like, okay. And then other than that, I mean, just like straight up cash saving, it's like relative to what they were making, they were living pretty high off the hog, you know what I mean? And so they were feeling stressed because and I feel this, I understand this, is like at the end of the month and you get that credit card bill, you're like, I got to do something about this credit card bill. I can't be looking at a credit card bill of $13,000 for 1 month. That's ridiculous. You know what I mean? Or even $8,000 or whatever. I mean, this is
right. Well, and then you have kids on top of that, and then you've got like the Audi that you're making payments in the garage, and
yeah,
It's all these things levered. That some things are necessary, some things that you like. But kids, you can't really like walk out of that, obviously. But other things that in your mind you've built up as necessities, but just totally don't make any sense for what you actually have.
Yeah, but you know that you're lucky. You know that you're high income. You know that you can afford it, meaning like, you know, you're not going into deep credit. You're not going into a hole to buy this stuff, but what you're doing is you're sort of like making it impossible to really sock away. Like, you're making a high income, but the savings is not there. It's like money come, money go.
Right.
And so at the end of the day, like, are you any better off than someone who's making less but saving more? And it's like, well, only in the sense that you're living slightly more premium than them, right? Yeah, so instead of a Toyota, you're driving an Audi, right? Instead of going to Florida, you're going to Hawaii, you know, right. Instead of going to Disney World or whatever, you're going on a Disney cruise or whatever the fuck. Do you know what I mean? Like minor, very like small differences.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember you and Mike talking about like tax percentages for like however much, you know, if you're making like $1 million, let's say, a year, and how much of that goes to taxes. And which, I mean, from someone in like people in my tax bracket, you know, is a lot. And even if after taxes, you're still doing really fucking good. But from the perspective of when you think about like wealth overall in this country and what we actually like, what that actually means, you know, I think we don't really have like a coherent understanding or a unified understanding of what like the 1% actually is, because it's just, you know, this is something I've thought about a fair amount, like, because like I get paid off of taxes, like every dollar I make is off of taxes, and it's like we don't really tax the rich, like the ultra wealthy in this country. It's like, so for me, when I show up to work every day, the thing I always think to myself is like, this is, I get paid off of like people who actually worked. And you can like debate like the difference between some guy who's like making $1 million a year versus like some fucker who's just like at the very bottom of that curve. But to me, it doesn't, like, the distinguishing factor is like, I think there is this kind of flattening that you're describing, where it's like in terms of like your overall situation, where it's like you're not really saving that much. And you can try to like make distinguish it as like whether or not it's, how much of this is your fault, how much of it's like, you know, like buying an Audi or something, buying a fancy car, it's a stupid decision or whatever. But I think, like, when I think about the state of this country and how things are going, like, you have to think about these problems in terms of what everyone is facing. And I don't know, it's not even really like a thing that I feel like empathetic about it. It's just like the reality. And I think it's, to me, what's interesting is like, it doesn't really seem to matter where you go up and down. It's like you're still kind of just feeling the heat no matter what, unless you really are a part of that 1%, which gives you, well, like,
look, I think what's going on is if you look at the political trends over the past decade or more.
Yeah.
Okay, like what was Trump? One. What Trump won, right? Trump won was a sort of like populist rebellion that we haven't seen coming from red states.
Mm.
Trump 2 was that same rebellion, but with even deeper penetration into blue states, because all the, and they don't talk about this, but like, have you noticed the Democrats really had a sort of like come to Jesus moment after Trump 2, the Trump 2 victory, because it was like, wait, every single group moved towards Trump. Every single group moved towards Trump,
mm-hmm.
including urban, Black, and Asian and Hispanic voters. Moved
right,
and Hispanics moved significantly towards Trump, even though the Democrats were like, you know, he's, you know, he hates Hispanics, right? He wants to throw you all out of the country. They still moved that way, and I think it's because if you look at that, if you think of that encroachment kind of feels like a sort of pandemic, you know what I mean? Or epidemic. Mm. It feels like there is a kind of malaise out there or some kind of thing, you know, sickness that's moving through the countryside first and then working its way into the cities, which is how a lot of these like pestilences work. And I think that's an economic malaise. It started, it really gutted out sort of like heartland states, Rust Belt states, Midwest. And then it started now to that, you know, that's starting to spread into the cities.
Right.
And by the time we got to 2024, you know, we were seeing significant problems even among the professional class in the urban areas where there wasn't necessarily enough room for all of us, you know? And so look at the discontent of Asian Americans, you know, and like the way we get locked out of elite positions and elite schools and stuff because of the sharp elbows being raised among the elites.
Right.
And so I just think like it's a shrinking pool of, you could think of it as a spreading pestilence or you could think of it as a sinking ship, and the number of spots above the waterline are dwindling, and the number of spaces on access to lifeboats is there's way too few of them, and it feels like to some extent the Titanic is sinking, and more and more people are starting to, you know, I think when there's a doomerism and I feel like this whole thing's broken and whatever, then you can start seeing the sort of like angry sort of that sort of like politics of just like utter resentment.
Yeah.
That Trump represents.
Yeah. It's funny you bring up a sinking ship, because I had this dream a couple months ago, but I've been coming back to it a fair amount recently, because it just like has been lining up so much about what I think about with work and government currently in this country. And the dream was like, so like I'm on a boat, right? And I think it's like maybe like some kind of like bigger cargo ship, but also is maybe like one of those New Orleans style fucking down the Mississippi River things with like the big,
like a fucking paddle boat, like a river boat.
But yeah, the river boat, you know, river boat casino on the back of it. The river boat. Yeah. Yeah.
There's no better, in my opinion, there's no better physical embodiment of America than like a riverboat casino. That's the kind of people we are. But yeah.
Oh, I never really thought about that way, but riverboat, yeah, that makes gamblers, sense.
That's what we are. Yeah, that's what Trump is, you know?
Yeah. So I'm in that kind of style boat. But the thing is I'm inside of it. Like I'm in sort of like an engine room, I guess. The thing is that I'm the only person in the room. There's no portholes or windows that like give me an indication about what's going on the outside. And I'm at work, and it's weird because the lighting is like an office. It's like I've got the ceiling tiles and it's like bright fluorescent lights, but it's like I'm working on a fucking engine. I don't know, it's like kind of a combination of my current job and my old job, I guess. But like I start feeling the waves and it just starts getting like insane, like the degree that the boat is rocking, and I'm like, are like in the middle of a storm or something, what's going on out there? And eventually the engine stops just completely and I can't do anything, so I go outside and it's dark out and everyone's freaking out. It's just like it's just chaos. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And no one will explain to me what's going on. It seems like maybe there's something wrong with the ship. So I decide to go up to like the captain's, whatever the fuck room, you know, where the big steering wheel is, to be like
bridge.
Yeah. Thank you. I don't know shit about boats, just FYI for anyone listening. So apologies if I get all the terminology wrong. But so I go up to the bridge to like try to get some clarity about what I should be doing, if anyone's there. And I like go to the door, I like knock and I open, and there's just fucking no one there. just no one at all. And it's got that like old timey wheel, just like in the Titanic, where it's like that the you know, captain would be at. But it's just spinning like insanely fast. Like if I tried to grab it, I would hurt myself. And I look out like the window of like where the, you know, what it, you're like looking out on. And suddenly it's like the scale of everything has just multiplied like tenfold. It feels, I don't know why I had this thought, but I felt like I was like watching 9/11 happen in boat form, where it's just like the scale of disaster. And I don't even know what the disaster is. I don't know if the boat's sinking. I don't know if there's like a fire or some shit. And then I wake up. But it's just like this, I don't know. I come back to that and I think about how, you know, I think it was like you and T during the last Champagne Sharks pod was talking about how, like, you know, the like conspiracy theorists kind of fantasy is that there's an authority out there, but it's a shadow authority that is like pulling the strings from behind this curtain. And it's just a matter of like finding the right curtain that you need to like pull, and you will see just how the entirety of everything works, and expose that, which is what I feel like how a lot of people I know, when you boil down how they talk about like Trump and like, to be totally transparent, most people I talk to are like blue liberal, Kharkarian liberal types. And for me, I feel like the attitude I have kind of been coming to is just like, there's just fucking no one in charge. I mean, obviously there's people who are like making calls, got name and addresses and shit, who are making calls, and like it is, the things that happen are a result of either they're good or bad calls. But in the sense of like that, people who have a hard grasp of reality, that where it's like they have control over like everything makes sense to them. And like, if you were to follow these leaders, it would like, you would arrive at maybe not a great world, but a world where everything is like coalesces with what everything else that's going on. That just doesn't exist. And I think it's been like, for me, like I remember when the war in Ukraine first started, I was pretty caught off guard. And that's something that has like kind of stuck with me, that feeling where I was just like, as an average American, I didn't fucking think a goddamn thing about like what was going on prior to that conflict starting. Like I knew like NATO was garbage and all this other stuff shit, but it was just like one of those moments where it's just like, holy shit, this is like something that like is going to impact us. Very minimally, but like will still impact us and is going on in the world. And we are apparently are putting a shit ton of money into, and I had no idea about. And it feels like a lot of people in Washington at the time just also were like similarly clueless. And I've just been having this increasing feeling. And I think that's less true with Trump. I feel like he does have some like a better idea of reality than anyone in Biden's administration did. But at the same time, it's there's these elements of it too where I'm like, yeah, it feels kind of like a lot of what is going on is people just making shit up as they go. And I don't know. I'm a little bit grateful because it, like everything, when I have like this perspective that there's like no centralized authority that's really making shit happen and people are just kind of reacting constantly, the world makes a lot more sense. But I could see it being that if I thought that this shit was all being orchestrated, the world would be very confusing, you know? So I don't know. It's like, maybe this is all just bullshit that I'm making up.
No, I see what you're saying. I don't totally think I do think that, I still think that one of the delusions of our time is that the problem is, that we can't get good leadership.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we have plenty of good leaders. The problem is that we don't have any good options. And there's really nothing to do.
Right? You mean good, like, options, like, and options in terms of specific people, or
no, like in terms of this position of the United States right now.
Okay, yeah.
Like, okay, so for example, like Trump wants to Trump's economic plan, which is probably going to drag us into some, I think it's going to drag us into, just looking at how serious he is about this, it's going to drag us into like a into something worse than 2008 and something that can't be fixed.
Yeah.
The way that we essentially fixed 2008, right? Like, we repaired it. So that the system went back to what it was prior to this onset of the crisis. But I think the current situation is where there's like a sort of paradox that has to do with money, and it has to do with the US dollar and the fact that the money that's used as a de facto global currency is also a domestic currency for us, and that creates certain unresolvable conflicts, which is called the Triffin dilemma.
Never heard of it.
The Triffin dilemma. So the Triffin dilemma is this issue where the role that your money plays as the international reserve currency, there are certain demands placed on that money and the monetary policy to supply that money to the world through these structural trade deficits, which ends up deindustrializing us and making your currency too expensive to be competitive in the marketplace. So the Triffin paradox is like, you have this country. I know this sounds really, I'm going into like this weird rabbit hole of economics here in monetary policy. I know, but think of it this way. I know, yeah, like that's very technical or whatever, but like, think of it this way. It's really like we came upon, because there's something very like, there's something very almost fable like about this, which is that we as a country came upon something like a golden goose, or like something like the ring of power. And that was our ability to just print money.
Right.
And have that money. The second we willed it into existence, it had incredible value around the world. It wasn't just like some local, you know, like most countries, if they print their local money that nobody gives a shit about, you know, you just devalue it. But here, it's like the world doesn't go by gold standard anymore. It goes by the US dollar. That's the fundamental, that's the most lowest. Think of it this way. The world is measured in kilometers. The world is measured in degrees Celsius. The world is measured in seconds. And it's also, when it comes to wealth, it's measured in US dollars. So that, right, like we basically own like the centimeter of wealth, right? Or the meter of wealth. And we could print as much of, create as much of it as we want. And it's like coming into the, it's like finding the ring of power, or like finding the golden goose. And it is bound to create self-destruction. It's bound to create a kind of like almost like a spiritual crisis. And
yeah,
it poisons you, that kind of power. I mean, like, these are fable like tales that we should. But, you know, it's really hard. I guess we tend not to think of these fables when it comes to our actual situation in life. But that's what I think. I mean, I really do think that that's one of the problems. And it's going to be really tough for Americans to adjust to a world where we lose that power. But we will lose that power. We'll probably lose it within the next 4 years under Trump.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you're right. I've been reading again. I never finished it, but I've been trying to finish David Graeber's Debt, the First 5,000 Years. And he goes into it almost like nauseating detail. But I mean, a lot of what he said, I think, coalesces with what you're saying, in terms of it's just like this idea of belief in something that And I it's just like interesting too, because it just mirrors so much of not even like monetary factors, but just in general American life, how much operates at this level of belief, the zealousy, where things, you know, even though it's supposed to be fairly like agnostic, has this like very how would you say it's just like this religious element of belief to it in everything that we do. That I think one of the things that why I wanted to talk to was just in terms of government is like there are so many things about how American government currently functions or does not functions, depending on how you wanted to frame it, where like you don't really know the reason why you're doing something, which is not, I actually don't think is a bad thing. Like if you have a job where you show up and there is like a huge element of that job where it's like you don't totally understand the reason why you do it, but like your boss, a higher authority, tells you to do it, and so you do it. I think to certain regards that makes, in historically even, that makes a lot of sense, because it's just like you have that trust that someone above you or someone before you put considerable thought into something. And because they put considerable more thought than you have time to really do it, it makes a lot of sense to just keep doing that. However, it feels like you can't really, even if you sit there and like think about the logic of why certain things, and like in terms of like bullshit jobs, for instance, why you do the certain things, you can't really stem the logic very coherently. But also B, it's you don't have that element of respect for authority at all anymore. So it's like it's just interesting too, like with like a lot of the dissension in district courts to a lot of Trump's executive orders, you know, it's you just have like this absolute chaos. Like I remember my mom said something to me where she's like, Trump's defying these courts, and I'm like, what, that's, you got the shoe on the other foot, you know, where it's just like it doesn't, but there's just like this no coherence as to like where authority lies and why that was ever good in the first place. And I think if you have a society that has a, like heavy sense of tradition in it, it makes a lot more sense, because you can take those shortcuts of just trusting the tradition of something and it still functions, because even if you don't know why, you might have bullshit that's involved in your job where you just like do it because you're told to do it, because you have that trust, it makes life like tolerable and maybe even like kind of makes a lot of sense. But that doesn't exist at all from what I see at my job, where it's like there's just so much of this like almost encouraged kind of antagonism, where you just have this endless need to like rebel against shit. Which it's hard, because there are times where it's like, yeah, some fucking like major authority in Washington State makes a fucking bad call, I'm like, yeah, that was a garbage call. That is just like the most harebrained nonsense in the world. But then at the same time, then you have all this bad process that comes along with it, where people try to like, there's no sense of like trying to deal with it in the way that I think government was meant to be dealt with, at least in like any constitutional sense. And so the reaction just seems to be, you know, I have this goal in mind that I want to achieve, and I'm going to like abuse the system in whatever way is possible to achieve that goal. And that is just like a thing that has become so commonplace that, like, I think the number, I can't remember, it was like 20, like the number of people who have applied to law school this year has gone up to 20%. And it just seems like there's like this attitude of just like, you want to drag this shit in the court endlessly just like, you know, putting shit on the record and writing, you know, new rules, new statute that you want to like have dictate how certain things should go and force people to that. And this is a really, this one is kind of caught me off guard, but I was watching this fucking, who was it? It was a talk by Warren Buffett and his like lawyer. I can't remember the guy's name. He's like 100 years old. One of the things that they were saying was like how complexity breeds corruption, which, you know, I mean, when you think about in terms of like some neoliberal guy who's wants like, whatever, it makes total sense they'd say that. But it's like, it caught me really off guard just because I was listening to him say that. And I'm like, holy shit, that totally is 100% true about like what it just coalesced with everything I think about in terms of my job and like what I see works and what doesn't and what just like causes chaos. Where it's just like this, you know, this attitude about policies, about rules, where if you just create enough for them, you can like prevent the bad people from doing the wrong things. But that's actually the opposite of what happens, is it? Because when you create such like a high level of complexity, what ends up happening is that the good people, that the whatever like system you're designing to support, they get so bogged down by all the expectations that they can't get anything done, and you burn them out and you roll and they just get folded over. And the people that you're left with are the crooks who, are like, we're the whole time trying to stay around and like figure out the bullshit rules. Cause they were just trying to do this one thing to extract as much, whatever. And it's really bizarre because, like when you think about it in terms of like Doge, I mean, I'm kind of on a similar page as you where I'm like, when they first announced that, I didn't feel particularly threatened by it. Cause it's like, we'll see how long this lasts. I mean, it's just like the first few months of any administration, like who knows, you're going to do a bunch of like fucking fireworks and bullshit where it's people make a big deal, but like, it's just so hard to say what administration you're going to think about it until, you know, long after it's over. But I digress, but like regardless, is like when it comes to like making cuts to the federal government, American federal government, it makes a lot of sense in the sense like that there is so much like just needless garbage government workers out there. Like I can't have this anecdote. So one of my former coworkers from when I worked at a restaurant, she ended up getting a job, think in Oregon State working for the government. I don't know what like specific department or whatever, but so when she first got that job, she was working fully remote because she started during the pandemic or like shortly before or after. And they had this like app or something installed on the computer where it would track like the number of keystrokes per minute that the person was doing to make sure that you were doing the work, which sounds insane to me. I'm really grateful the work agency doesn't have anything like that, but I'm sure that is like something that happens in private business too. But what she did in response to that was she somehow installed like a program on the computer that faked the keystrokes so that like there was like a program telling a program that she was actually working when she wasn't. So she could literally do nothing all day and she would just collect like this government paycheck, but because her boss who like provided no oversight, which really, you know, reasonably it was during the pandemic, it was difficult. We were still figuring things out, but was just relying on this fucking bullshit app that she was just siphoning taxpayer dollars out of the job. And so while she had that thing going, she ended up getting a job doing some other like IT bullshit. She's working two jobs for the pay of one, or for the pay of, she was getting the pay of two jobs for only doing the work of one. And it's just like really fucking, she was like telling this story to us as if like kind of bragging, but like it was like I was at a bar with her and a few of our other former coworkers at the restaurant, and we were kind of like, that's cool, I think. Where it's just like, It was just interesting watching, because I was feeling it too, and I was watching the rest of my coworkers who aren't state workers, and they're like, "It's obviously this is like not actually cool. It's pretty fucked up." And so when it comes to Doge, I understand that there's probably a lot more bullshit like that, where it's just like people who are collecting checks and waiting for the cash out. But at the same time, it's like, I think you tweeted at some point, like the percentage of like public wealth versus private wealth in this country, you compare it to someplace like China, it's just like, it's abysmal, because there's just nothing.
It's over 90% of national wealth is in private hands.
Right.
Which is why we're such a rich country, but it doesn't look that way, because all the really extravagant wealth is hidden away from public access.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's frustrating, because on the one hand, like, I actually totally understand the need to like get rid of those bullshit jobs. It's just siphoning taxpayer dollars into these fucking people who are scamming it. At the same time, I feel like the way the U.S. government has developed is that it's designed wholly with like the scammers in mind, and it's not designed to support like people who actually are decent and want to like just do work or whatever, you know, just normal ass fucking Americans. This is designed around like making sure that scammers don't scam. And you could like try to, I don't know if it's like a chicken egg thing where you want to say it's the culture, whether it's the government or whatnot. But to me, it's just like you create the situation where there's just so many fucking loopholes. I mean, if you're someone who wants to get on like food stamps, you want someone who needs to apply for public defender, you someone who just needs to access basic fucking services, it's a headache. So a lot of people just don't do it. And that's the kind of stuff that you actually want taxpayer dollars to go to, not some fucking state worker who's making like over 150 a year for multiple years and just sits there at the computer and does nothing all day but to look at Reddit. And it is just hard, because the thing is, it's like I describe that, and you know, I think most people listening can probably identify like American government as kind of like a giant waste of their fucking money. But at the same time, you have people who are actually like doing shit that like they want to like help, they want to support. That idea of government that seems so lost in this country, but isn't lost in other places. I think that was another thing I've been struggling with reading David Graeber's book, is because, you know, at the end of the day, he's an anarchist, and he associates a lot of he pretty consistently will draw the connection of how like the development of debt is directly tied to like taxes and government trying to justify its own existence, and how that's inherently extortive, which is fine. You know, he would know more better than I would. But to me, it's just like, at the end of the day, like there are governments that do better than what we got going on. So it's like, I don't think you can completely lean on that. Like,
I guess my feeling is, who cares?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So you have these theories about what might make a better government. You have an idea about how America could run better. Okay, so the question then is, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to devote your life to that? I guess my feeling about this now is, it's like, look, if it matters to you that much that you're going to devote your life to doing something about it, you're a hero, you're a saint in the future when all this is said and done. People who sacrifice their lives for the betterment of everyone in a time like this are the true heroes. But I'm not a hero, right? Like, I don't care about that.
And the thing is, too, is like, when I think about like people fucking sacrificing themselves and like throwing themselves in the grinder, that's what the fucking like the way this country's built already. Like, the way the country's built is to, like, the expectation that people like, if you're like a fucking primary, like the main income for a household, you're kind of just expected to grind yourself into the fucking paste in order to like make a living in this country. And it's just, it's so many different levels at which that's encouraged and expected.
Okay, fine. But what I'm saying is, what are you going to do about it? That's what I keep thinking now, is like, when I hear people talk about what's wrong with our society, and it's like, okay, look, everyone's got a theory about what's wrong with our society, but the question, and everyone's got a theory about what we need to do about it, like Ezra Klein shopping his new book about we need to have abundance mentality, okay, whatever, okay, but like, what what am I going to do tomorrow when I get up differently than I would otherwise with these thoughts in my head? And I realized for myself, it was like, dude, I got to play my position.
Sure.
Okay. I'm not president of the United States. I'm not a scholar, like a world-renowned scholar that can spread, you know, enlighten, you know, the elite, the, you know, enlighten the elites and change the, that's not who I am. Like, I'm just a regular fucking dude. And the only use that any of this thinking and figuring and observing and all this shit is good for is so that I can play my hand as best I can, so I can survive and fight another, and live and fight another day.
And yeah, I agree with that 100%.
Because honestly, I don't, thinking about the well-being of everyone as a whole and the future of America and all this shit, it's like, dude, the only thing I can tell you is open your fucking eyes, okay? The problems that we have are not going to be solved by each of us chipping in a little bit. If each of us was just a little bit more conscientious than this, no, it's not. That's not the problem. And so now I think people need to wake up and understand that as ugly as the situation is, that's the situation. And yeah, it's a bit of a dog eat dog world that we're in,
right?
You know,
right.
And this is our economy is not filled with pro social, pro development, pro common good type jobs where we're, you know, feel like we really accomplished something at the end of the day, right? We're all living in fucking Glengarry Glen Ross, which is that your boss is a guy who comes out and beats your ass until you figure out how to take money from other people.
Right.
Okay. Now, the higher up you go or whatever, you may find a position in life and be lucky where you don't have to deal with a reality that ugly. But that's part of the system. I mean, I don't have to deal at that level, but I know the nature of the ground on which this is all built. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I guess my point to a lot of people, like it just in thinking, just certain types of thinking about life now is like, I see so many people who are so angry and so upset or whatever. And it's like, okay, you're angry and you're upset, but to what end? Like you're angry about something usually means that you want to change something. You want to do something. Okay. What's the change that you're going to make? Do you know what I mean? And if there's no change that you're going to make, then maybe the key is to actually let go of that shit and realize like, okay, now I just have to understand that I can't walk around with the sort of like self-entitled feeling that I deserve a better world than this. The world should be better than this because this is no world for a human being, you know, like whatever. It's like, yeah, it's not. It sucks. But what makes you think that you should be angry about the fact that you're in a world that's not like that? You know, like why do we have the, why do we feel entitled to something better is my feeling about this? Because maybe we're not, you know, and what your job is really to just kind of like mind like how you navigate this reality that you've been placed in, you know, rather than sit around and just be angry about the whole thing. That's like, there are people who are trying to do big things, like trying to change this reality at a big level. And that's amazing. I'm just not one of those people, right? So I'm just like a regular person. And so I guess for regular people who have no power and no will to sit around being angry and, you know, mourning and whatever, it's like you're just hurting yourself and you're making yourself easy prey in an environment that is very much about predator prey.
Yeah. Well, and it's like you're hurting yourself, but you're also like, you're fucking miserable to be around.
Guess what? People don't give a shit. I mean, if you're going to make yourself easy prey, it's like, well, he's better that guy than me.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just the ugly truth. I know, but like, that's the kind of world we live in. It's really brutal. And, you know, in a way, like I kind of can't deal with like personally, I'm just saying, I just feel like people who are like kind of stuck in the moment of like not being able to process or handle or accept the state that we're in. It's like, I don't know, man. I don't know if I can really hang with that, because it's like, well, how's that going to help me? You know what I mean? Like, what's that going to do for me?
You know? Well, I think I'm not even like necessarily trying to be prescriptive or like give good advice to people listening at all. I think for me, it's like the way I think about it is like the way the world is going is kind of built for people like me to succeed, meaning people who don't have like a whole lot of attachments, who are pretty independent. And just capable in general, high capacity.
I mean, that's one way. It's not the only way, but that is definitely sure. I think, yeah. one adaptive pathway. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, so I'm like, for me, the way I look at it is like, I'm going to be fine. I don't have a whole lot of concerns. I mean, if shit's the fan, like I'll figure it out. So it's like, once I hit that point and I get all my shit like figured out, I start thinking about like my family, start thinking about my friends. And I think it's just one of those things that like where I don't even know if I really struggle. I always know what to do. I know what to say, what I need to say. And I kind of, even in a lot of the times, I hate to say it, but kind of like know what the results are going to be. Where it's just like, it's kind of like what you're describing, where it's just like people are just so low capacity and attached to these ideas in a like pretty like across the board way, where it's just like, it's surprising to me, because it's like, I'm like dealing with people who like with pretty like different backgrounds across the United States. And I mean, for the first time for me, like, I didn't really deal with like white collar types prior to this job. And now I am. And I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, man.
You know what I think of it?
Like, fucking walk.
Do you remember when Trump first won?
Yeah.
And there was I don't know if you remember this, but there was like this famous Saturday Night Live episode that what's his name? Dave Chappelle hosted.
Oh yeah.
And he gave like one of the first like monologues about Trump.
Let's give him a chance.
Yeah. And then there was a skit where there were like all these white people watching the results, and they were like in total denial about what was going on, and they were freaking out. And Chappelle and Chris Rock were like the black friends who were in the back and like totally not surprised. And they were like, yeah, we thought he was going to win. Like, what do you thought, you know? And the white people were like, wait, is America racist? You know, and Chris Rock and Chappelle were looking at each other with that knowing look, like, you know, white people are really deluded. I mean, I think that the basic structure of that, which is like, there are some people who are like really struggling to like adjust to these kind of shocking changes, versus people who, for whatever reason, because they were, you know, racial minority, or they, you know, for whatever reason, had a different perspective on it and could see maybe further ahead. You know, you want to be one of those people. Like, yeah. You want to be able to see further ahead and around the bend and stuff before other people can. And so I know this is really sick, but it's like, look,
no, I think you're totally right. It's
when other people just don't get it, I don't feel the fucking need to like. I'm no longer just like really upset that they don't get it or whatever, you know. I'm not angry or sad about that. Sure. I'm just like, more people that are not gonna are not gonna get it in time. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
What am I going to do? I don't know. I'm trying to get it for myself. I'm trying to place myself in a situation where I can survive in advance, right? I don't want to put myself in a position where I can't. Now, if I can, like, if there's someone I can help really easily, you know, like one of my friends or whatever, and we give each other advice and, you know, whatever, like, that's cool, you know, because of it's just like the bare minimum of what you can do is just, you know, kind of share notes and share thoughts and stuff.
Yeah.
But fundamentally speaking, I mean, like, dude, this is a brutal fucking world, you know? And I think some of us have been lucky enough to live in a situation where we don't have to see the truth of that.
Right.
And we're insulated. And as we lose that that protective insulation, you get kicked out into the cold, hard pavement of reality. Brutal. That's just a brutal shift in mental perspective that I think is fucking people up, because when you see the world from the other side, it's pretty terrifying.
Yeah. It really is. One of the things I've just been surprised by is just like people I would have thought who, know down and out better than I do, who still like freak out about like Trump and shit, where I'm just like,
which by the way, we're at an hour. Should we like continue this on a bonus pod?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So we'll end it. We'll end the free part here. If you guys, as usual, want access to bonus episodes and things like that, go to patreon.com/planetmac. All right.